Welcome to the PopGo Project Podcast, a platform for the discussion and discovery of arts and entertainment. We focus on highlighting people and events that add value to the world around us. Visit us on all social media platforms by searching the PopGo Project or visit our website at thepopgoproject.com. Welcome to the show and thank you so much for listening. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Keller's Garden Center and Landscaping Services. Contact Keller's today and get your yard cleaned up before that dirty old man winter comes. I hate to say it, but he's on his way. The mornings are cold. They're frigid. I don't like it. I'm turning the steering wheel warmer on. I'm putting the seat warmers on. It's just miserable. But contact Keller's today. And if you're looking for snow removal services during the winter months, they can take care of that for you too. Do not break your back this winter and leave the heavy lifting to the professionals at Keller's, family owned and operated. Their team is looking forward to serving you. Keller's Garden Center and Landscaping Services, located on Kern Street in Exeter near Blue Ribbon Dairy. Find them on social media to learn more. Hello, Johnny. I'm Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. This is Johnny.
Got Johnny.
The Johnnies.
Yeah, couple of Johns. You know, back in the day, that was frowned upon.
To be a John.
To be a John.
Well,
yeah.
You know, if you're in the Philly, we play through Philly quite a bunch, and that you know they refer to things as John, this John or that John, except it's J A W N.
Okay. Yeah, when I was a little kid, like it was like. You know, you didn't want to be referred to as the John because that's a bathroom, right? No fun. And then later it was like the adult stuff. And it's like, I don't know which is worse.
Take me back to being a kid, man. I don't ever want to grow up.
For sure. For sure. But we got Johnny of Johnny Litz Jerry Duty. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me, Johnny. Happy to be here.
It's so weird. But yeah, I mean, we tried lining this up a few months back. Didn't quite work out schedule-wise, but happy to have you on now because you're going to be coming back to our area, northeastern Pennsylvania, specifically the River Street Jazz Cafe on March 16th, which when this releases, it'll be like in a couple days. So yeah. Back into town. And I say back into town, you're originally from Scranton, Pennsylvania, but you're a nationally touring Jerry Garcia tribute band. And I don't know a lot about you, man. Like I've seen your name. It's funny. I saw Axelrad did shirts for the band.
We just did a big merch order with those guys. It was our largest one to date. So we were really grateful to keep it hometown.
Who'd you talk to?
So Wes, a friend of mine who did the graphic design on our most recent artist, Wes Knorr. Yeah. He did our art and we were just stoked. I've been talking to Wes for a while too. And part of Jerry Duty and the thing is it's a collective. So for me, it's not, you know, the music is one part of it, but it's only a slice of it. Jerry Duty is a little bit bigger than that for me. So that's really, the like-minded getting together to celebrate and to share their gifts. And that being said, you know, we have some great people back home. I've been trying to line things up with Wes for a minute and it just worked out. We switched artists and we were so happy that he did our work on this run. We were just really blown away. And then also working with Axelrad, that's people that have been on their radar too. And it just worked out. They really took care of us. And we actually had our merch shipped on tour. So we had our merch shipped to St. Louis. We were playing the City Winery in St. Louis, and it was pertinent that we had to have it there that day at that time. And they were really so accommodating. So we're really blessed with the support we got from both of those guys.
Well, I was so mad that you didn't use me directly that I actually quit Axelrad. It's your fault.
What?
Yes, I quit Axelrad. I'm done.
Oh, what? Come on, Johnny.
Nothing to do with you. No, I actually, today I started. So today is March 5th. Recording this today I started back working for Shamrock Communications, specifically Rock 107 ESPN Radio and QFM. It was before QFM was Alt and Fuzz and all those things. So I'm back into radio sales. My last day at Axelrad was March 1st.
Wow, get out of here. Were you involved with my order?
I saw it going through the shop. Yeah.
You did?
But I was not directly involved, no. But it's a weird, thing. I started today at, like I said, Rock 107. It'll be my third time with the organization. And it was such a difficult decision. I don't even know
to leave
Axelrad. Yeah. It's a special place. I was there for 3 years and the culture there is unmatched. And just one of those things that I wasn't looking to leave. Something came my way and I'm a big believer and everything happens for a reason. So this opportunity presented itself and, part of me is like a media guy, true and true, or through and through. I started at the Weekender, when I was 22 or whatever it was. And I've been in media ever since. And it just kind of felt like something I had to explore. So, but it was weird.
So ESPN in the sports world. Now, outside of I know you from entertainment, being the entertainment guy. And exactly like you said, in the Weekender, I've heard your name, used to read some of your stuff and just all that. And wow, making the step to sports.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, it's like I said, I've been with the organization. This will be my third time. And so I'm a big sports guy too. But yeah, so Rock 107, ESPN, and QFM. But it was a bittersweet moment for sure. But obviously, I wish all those guys and girls at Axelrad the best, and they're the best in the business. And we went to the right place.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate. We'll continue to work with those guys as well in the future. They really accommodated us. And like I said, trying to reduce stress levels, you don't want to change variables, even the smallest thing, when there's so many moving parts in touring and promoting and performing and all that. Yeah, it always makes you a little nervous. But after the way they really came through and had everything waiting for us, and Wes was unbelievable, really worked with our ideas, and it felt good to have another hometown person on the team. So it was a right place, right time. We're really grateful.
I used to work with the band Cold. And I would be
doing
the same.
With them? I know Johnny Nova, and I'm trying to think who else. Who sings for Cold?
Well, it's still Scooter, but Johnny and Nick Coyle, they're no longer part of the band. It's actually two guys from University Drive, Angelo and Ed.
Yep.
They took their spots, but I was working with them and I was constantly having to drop ship, meeting them, their order, meeting them at their next location. Mm-hmm. It was always stressful because I'm like, oh man, it's like, that's like probably one of the most stressful things about the screen printing world is there's like, as a salesperson and a person who starts the order, there are so many places after it leaves your hand that it can go wrong.
Yep.
Everyone.
And who are they mad at? You.
They're mad. Yeah, they're mad at the guy. There's so many. And I mean, once it gets out the door, I mean, at that point, it could be perfect and gets out the door into the hands of UPS. And I mean, it's out of your hands. It's like, fingers crossed they do their job today. But they're always like 99% good. But there's always that 1% that makes you wake up in the middle of the night hoping the order arrives. Because if you miss it, it's a mess. Yeah. So I'm glad you had a good experience. I'm glad you got your merch. But so you're touring right now. Talk a little bit about that. Like I said, you started here in the Scranton area, but since then you've kind of expanded your reach, so to speak. So talk a little bit about, Jerry Duty and the things you've, the early beginnings to where you are today.
Well, I remember the first Jerry Duty show. We played at a buddy of mine's place. It was called Crooked Creek. It was near Ricketts Glen out in that area. And there was nothing going on. But this was, for a better sense of the word, kind of like a redneck bar, that there was no one really cared about, social distancing or this or that. And the place was so big that it wasn't really an issue. So we did our first show there and we had to have, at least 70 people for a first show. So that was huge, you know, especially considering where we were. So it really went off to a success. Since then, the Jerry Duty band has changed so many times and evolved, and even the material that we perform. It was kind of a natural progression. This project was purely based out of love. I'm playing my favorite music in the world and playing it any way we decide to in that moment. It's really based on collective improvisation. So we're not playing, I mean, musicians will know this, they're listening, but we're not playing to click tracks. You know, every time you hear a song, it's not 4 minutes and 38 seconds. It could be 20 minutes long, or it could be four. It could be faster. It could be a reggae version, or it could be more of a rocking version, or a little bit of country twang. It just depends on the way that room feels. And I have to say, I'm fortunate enough to be able to play with musicians who could speak that language, because there's not many people who can. I was brought up learning to play music, being an improviser. I don't know any other way. So when I learned how to play guitar and sing and learn to do this thing, I played with people older than me, and they just say, let's get together and play. I'd say, what songs are we playing? Don't worry about it. Just show up. And then I had to make them sound better, or like not be overstep anything and be able to gel and hang and add ideas, or else I wouldn't be invited back. So that's how I learned. It's like, you know your place, be really have big ears, as they say. Mm-hmm. So Jerry Duty is based on that idea. You know, from what I understand about Garcia, and that's what really this is a tribute to. It's not the Grateful Dead. It's a tribute to Jerry Garcia. As a Jerry fan and being fortunate enough to be able to work with people who have played with him or toured with him or performed with him, that was his thing. You know, the Jerry band music, which the Grateful Dead or what Jerry Duty primarily covers, is that was his favorite music to play. You know, he was trying to leave the Grateful Dead in the final years because it was just too big and too corporate. He just wanted to be raw and do that.
Yeah.
So this is a tribute to him continuing that legacy and trying to, you know, keep the culture alive and to celebrate really the lifestyle and that way of looking at music together. So that's how JRG essentially formed into, you know, it's highly improvisational. We don't know until we get there sometimes. The room could be very mellow and we could have a set list or something and say, you know what, this isn't going to work, out the window.
Right.
Let's try something now. Or this songs are too hot. Let's slow them down. So a lot of that is it's a feedback loop that happens with the audience and with us. So a thing I always say to people is that we make music together because that's really the truth. The energy I get from them, I kind of add something or the band adds something, we give it back to them and we trade that, we make music together. So we kind of, it's a co-creative project. That being said, you know, it originally started with a certain lineup and now I have certain different lineups across the country. I have different lineups that I run with in Vermont and that market, New England. I have different lineups that I run with in New York most of the time. We have a lot of special guests come in that make things really exciting. And, you know, the things I tell them is I say, I don't want you to play like John Conn or like any of the, you know, Melvin Seals. I want to hear your best you. I want to hear your best you. So I want them to add their flavor to it. And, you know, a lot of these guys are really, really good. So I'm fortunate enough to make music with them and to tour all over the country doing this. So sometimes it's a regular lineup. Sometimes I have special guests and it's things you've never heard before. But it keeps it exciting for me because playing the same thing all the time, that's like a slow and cruel death.
Right. I was going to say that's probably good. As a musician, as a creator, like that's got to be very appealing to you. And, you know, you talk about this rotating cast, like that's fun, right? It's not like you're playing the song and you have to hit every note and every chord and all this other kind of shit. It's like, we're going to just have a good time tonight.
No, we're going to serve the song. I always say have big ears and try and make everyone else sound good. Everyone sound, you know, try and serve the song first before you serve your own ego. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, being able to be open enough where allow things to go different directions, allow things to take form without being so stiff and rigid. And I think our fans are like that too. There's a lot of highly creative people that follow and support the band and they're part of this community that we're building and, you know, continuing to build. And they're all like unique, improvisational, cool people. that want the same thing. They don't want to hear the same thing over and over again. They're willing to take chances. And part of that is that sometimes they work out amazing. Other times they don't. But that's the risk you take in like jazz music or this type of music. And I feel fortunate that they're along for the ride too.
Yeah.
You know, I've had some, we've had some crazy nights and like, oh, that was so great. And we're like, oh man, that was, that took a totally different direction. But everyone loves it because it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, it's bigger than that. They want to take chances with us.
Right.
So that's what we're about. That's what we're about.
Is it safe to say that if I were to see you twice in a row, that each show will be different?
Yes. Yes. We changed. We're not a band that some bands, they'll work on their album release or they'll work on their newest hits and they'll play those songs every single night the same exact way the whole entire tour. That's what they do. They do whatever tour that is. For us, we're playing some deep cuts. We're playing some more popular stuff. We're changing the way that we play it. You know, we could have versions of the same song that one is 4 or 5 minutes. The other one's been recorded at 18 or 20. Mm-hmm. Where there was a break and we were kind of doing that feedback loop thing together with the audience. So no two shows are ever the same. Sometimes different lineups, sometimes you have special guests. We'll have a sax player. We'll have percussionists sometimes. We'll have people live paint. They paint live and create with us what we're creating.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That makes tapers come out and tape our shows. It's really a collective and we encourage that. We allow people to vend to their shows and create like a little market. As long as they're making the things themselves, that's our thing. As long as it's handmade, they're making it and they're creating it, they're welcome to come and vend and just share in that.
That's interesting. That's neat. And this all started like what, 4 years ago?
Yeah, 3 or 4 years ago. I want to say it was like 2021 maybe or 2020. See, Jerry Duty started, I want to say it was 2020, but I got hired for a country band when I started putting this thing together, and we were playing a lot. I just didn't have the time. So around COVID time, I ended up falling back into it and deciding, like, this is really what I need to do. This is what I have to do. Not that I need to, I have to do it.
Right.
So, yeah, so I'd say about 3 or 4 years now.
And I guess it's been going pretty well.
It has. It has been going very well. There's ups and downs with touring projects and newly touring projects too. There's so many variables and things associated, but we are playing so many different venues and big venues that we never thought we'd be able to at this place that we're at now. We get to make music with a lot of incredible artists and the community is really almost better than any other community out there. I mean, I'll say that we're very grateful.
Yeah, I mean, when you first started, like, I don't know, I'm not in that kind of scene, the jam bands and the, I mean, I love the music, I appreciate the music, I just not, I get very limited time to go to certain shows, and it's just not really on my radar. Sure. I mean, other than the fact that you wanted to do this style of music, I mean, did you think there was like a need and a void that needed to be filled?
Well, I did. I did. I felt like it was more about bringing the community together because I'd see some of these fans. I would go to some of these like Phil Lesh and Friends shows, or I used to go to the Rat Dog shows back in the day. And, you know, you'd see a lot of these cool people and like, where are these people? I'm sure they're like bummed out and not being with other people like themselves. I'm sure that they, you know, they need more opportunities to come together and celebrate this thing. It's bigger than the music to celebrate this thing. So that's how I felt with Jerry Duty. I felt like there was a need for that. And really, we started focusing more on the Jerry Garcia Band music, which covers songs like How Sweet It Is and I Second That Emotion and stuff like that. And then down to reggae songs like Harder They Come and Johnny Too Bad and some of this. So a different catalog of music that really at the time wasn't being touched on hardly at all. Now it's grown in popularity so much where it's a different thing. But when we started just a couple of years ago, it wasn't happening. No one was really covering that music. So I felt like there was a need, and especially in Pennsylvania. I wasn't thinking I wanted to tour regionally or nationally at that point. I just wanted to make the best music I could and have the best experience for everyone. So the progression of that was to go to bigger venues with better sound systems and better lighting and better experiences for people. So we could have a more fun, show, a more fun time.
Yeah.
So for sure. That was where that came from. Just out of pure love. I love it.
That's great. No, that's awesome. And like, I mean, once it got to a certain point, did you, you know, purposely like reach out to other venues and say, hey, I got this thing going on, yada, yada, yada? Or did, you know, did you kind of gain some traction and maybe some venues and other people reach out to you and said, hey, like, we love this idea. We love this style of music, and our crowd would eat that up too. Like, how did you expand your footprint?
So what happened, and I'm learning along this because I've been involved with projects, but I never, you know, Jerry Duty is really at this point, we've had booking agents and we've had managers come in, and, you know, a lot of them just didn't work out the way that we thought it was going to. So we're back to me just managing it all myself. But that being said, what was happening was we'd go to these venues, and every single time we go, there'd be more and more people. And then we said, you know, we're hearing from bigger venues, which started to talk to us. You can't play those venues anymore. Like, you can't play a venue that size and then play a theater for 2,000 people or 1,500 people. That's not, you know, so we had to kind of draw a line in certain markets and certain places that we can't play those places anymore. Not that we wouldn't love to, because we would absolutely love to. But there comes a point when you grow enough where you have to say, that's not serving us. And with the goal being, we want the best show possible. So that's the only reason for me to go to a bigger venue or us, is because there's better treatment for the performers. There's better lighting, better sound. It's a better experience for the audience and the culture. So we started getting more and more popular, and people started reaching out more and more. And we got so busy playing at smaller places where it didn't really make sense. So we had to kind of move up into the next tier, per se. I got a 15-passenger van a couple years ago, you know, with the touring thing. That was actually Cabinet's old van. You know, it's kind of funny. Another hometown story. They moved up to the bus.
Yep.
So they moved up to the bus, and then Pappy and those guys hooked me up with their old van at a really good price. So it's like, you know, we just hit that next level. I think a lot of bands, they'll play many times in a small area. They're playing 8 times a month, 6 times a month in Scranton.
Right.
You know, so it builds, like, how can you plan properly for that amount of shows? You can't, to make them the best party, the most exciting. It's not. So you have to play less shows and go further away.
Right.
So we hit that point of like, okay, this is cool, but we want to do something real with this. We want to leave the hometown and do something for real.
Yeah.
So that's what took us there.
Yeah. And as different as your shows might be, you know, night after night, like, I remember back, you know, when I was at the Weekender, you know, you'd have bands that would play every Friday, every week, or Friday, Saturday, and it would be, you know, 20 minutes away. And what happens is, and you know this, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but like, people like either get burnt out from it, or they're like, oh, I'll catch them tomorrow when they play. And then when that day comes and they miss them, like, oh, I'll just see them next week, they'll be here again. And it just kind of dilutes the whole thing. And you know, I think, I don't know when it kind of happened, but people kind of figured out, like, bands figured out, like, hey, I can't do this every single Friday night in Scranton, or, you know, within a, you know, 10-minute radius. And it makes those shows special. Like, again, and you get to, you know, play at new venues and see new people, but like, when you come home, it makes it special. It's you know, hey, we have to go see Johnny Litt, Jerry Duty. Got to go do it. Like, they're not going to be here for another 6 weeks. Like, get the babysitter, or if you've got kids, get the babysitter, whatever. Like, or, you know, mark it on your calendar, we're going, and you're going to make a night out of it.
Yeah, it's that part that happens, and I think it depends on your goals as a band. And the grand scheme of things, I know very little, but just in what I've learned, if your goals are to perform your music, whatever type it is, to larger amounts of people and be able to bring more people joy at a show, you have to start saying, you know, I can't play this many times in my market. I have to start going further away, even though it maybe financially doesn't make more sense. We're not making more money. you know, but you're growing that brand and you're earning new fans and you're, you know, they'll see you next time in a couple months when you come back, you know, so that's the way to do it. But I, from my understanding, the only reason why it stops people from that is I think a fear thing. And two, it's the expenses of touring.
Yeah.
They're up more than ever, lodging and transportation and fuel and marketing. And I mean, it's enormous. And without guarantees that are substantial, it's a scary thing to take on.
For sure.
Scary thing. So from my understanding, that's maybe why people don't do that. But any word of advice is just most people are overplaying.
Yeah.
You know, and I know how busy I am. I love live music. There's so many bands and even local people I would love to see. But just doing all the things I have to I have a family now and, you know, with touring and stuff, I have very, very limited time. So I think most people are kind of in situations like that now.
Yeah, you got to make it count.
Got to make it count, yeah. Most definitely. So that's Jerry duty, you know?
Yeah. And we got a big show coming up at the Jazz Cafe, like I said, the 13th or the 16th of March. That's a Saturday, right?
That's a Saturday. That's a super exciting show because the lineup from that show is pretty special. We have Brooke Jordan from Twiddle. He's going to be drumming with us. He's coming in from Vermont and doing that run with us. We have Adam Flicker, which was from the band American Babies. He's kind of our regular key player. He's a Philly guy, but he was with Tom Hamilton and whatnot from J-Rad, the band J-Rad that people know, Joe Russo's almost dead. Okay. They had a band called American Babies that was before that. So he was from American Babies. And then we have Jonathan Coleman from Muscle Tough. I don't know if you know John Coleman, but all extremely talented players from different backgrounds. So we're really excited. We have that show that's local, and we have a 420 show at the Renegade Winery, the Sherman Theater.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
Yep. So
I feel like, yeah, 420. Great day.
It's kind of a holiday in our world, John.
Right.
If you don't
yeah,
know
of
that.
Course. I know. I'm aware. this scene, I feel like it. You know, you say you have, you know, guys coming from Vermont and, you know, you have these fill-ins and all this. I feel like they, you know, people in the scene, artists in this genre, like tend to really like get amped about like, yeah, I'm going to come down from Vermont and I'm going to play this show with this band. Like, and you mentioned it before, you know, it being a communal type of thing, like how does that work? I mean, like we just talked about how it's not cheap to travel too. This scene, and I've noticed that a lot. It's just, you know, you can, it's people really love to gather and be like, yeah, I'll play that show and I'll open the show. And, you know, they want to be part of it.
So how that works, I'm not sure about other people, but in my world, you know, we talk, the jam band community is kind of small, at least of the people that are really doing it. You know, it's a big scene, but the people who are really playing or touring or whatnot, they're kind of a small nugget of people. So those names get tossed around a lot and we'll end up interacting with each other or like talk about future plans or like perform with each other. I'm like, hey, I need a fill for this. Can you fill in? Or, hey, this came up. I need a guitar player for the 3-day run or whatever it is. Sure, I'll be there. And you play and you have a great time. And you say, you know what? We're going to work together in the future. When something comes up, the favors are returned. So over time, I've built a catalog. I have probably 50 players in that catalog of people who are talented to varying degrees in different markets all over the country. So that's how it works. I kind of write material for the shows that I think would be suited for their strengths, what I think would really make them shine. And they would be able to be their best self with. And then we perform these shows. So it's very similar to like jazz.
Yeah.
In jazz, they have the real book. And that real book is 300 songs or so that every jazz player who is worth their weight in salt knows these tunes, or at least is familiar with them. In the jam band world, that's the Grateful Dead catalog. They're like the godfathers of this music. So if you're in it and really in it, those people know that material, or at least are pretty familiar with it.
It's funny too, because it's not just like, I don't, you almost couldn't like pinpoint. Well, I'm sure you could. If you saw someone, you could say, "Oh, I bet you they're you know jam band audience." But like, there's guys wearing suits and ties to work every day that are closet deadheads and things like that. Like, it's universal, and I think you just said that.
Everyone is included in our shows. Like, everyone is welcome. And that's the thing. You don't have to be a deadhead, you know, not with the patchwork clothes and the long dreadlocks and the whole thing. I mean, like you're saying, there's people who have came from this scene that are white collar business people and just like regular family people. And then there's like road dogs. They're on the road still touring and doing that thing. But they all have one thing in common. They love the Grateful Dead and they love the community. Mm-hmm. They love this community. It's very unique. And that's what drew me to it. I mean, wow, a community where people can completely be their authentic self.
Yeah.
And whatever that is. And whatever that is. So I'm very fortunate to be steeped in that and be able to do this thing with all these people.
Yeah. I feel like in a way we've lost that, you know, as a whole in the world. Like we've lost that just like, you know, one love type of deal or you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Totally. Totally. Yeah. That's really what it's about. You know, and I think in this scene, the tribute scene too, especially, I'm never going to be Jerry Garcia, nor do I want to be. I don't want to look like him and act like him, and I'm not about that. But I am about the spirit and the culture that came from. And part of those pillars of that community is like sharing, is expressing yourself, is supporting people around you, supporting the artists to take chances and take risks, you know, the same way we support the audience. We want them to come out and, you know, do their thing as well to help us build this music up. So it's really a community. We get to make music in a community. And that's really important.
Yeah. Did you ever like envision this, like being where it is today when you started?
I'll say this. One of the biggest moments, and not to get too cheesy on this, I told Kenny this too when I played with them. I said, my first show I did with Kenny Brooks. Kenny Brooks was the sax player of Bob Weir's band, the member of the Grateful Dead. Mm-hmm. And that was, never got to see Jerry, but I got to see Rat Dog and some of these post-Jerry projects. And that was like what really got me hook, line, and sinker. I was sold. You know, I'm like, I got it from them. So I saw them at the Sherman Theater. And then the first show I play, we did the headlining show. It was just us at the Sherman Theater. We did have an opener for that. We had an opener, but we played the Sherman Theater. And I'm looking over at Kenny. I said, Kenny, I was looking up at you at this stage. And I said, this thing changed my whole life. And the first time we get to play together on a run like this, we're back at the Sherman Theater headlining that show. So did I ever expect that? No.
Yeah.
But did I want to? Yeah. Did I think it was possible? Yeah, totally. Totally think it's possible. But, you know, we really couldn't do it without the support of the fans and our community, because it's not easy. All those things that we talked about, touring, and things are costly, you know, yeah. And things are, it takes a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And if we did this from a business perspective, it would never make sense.
Right.
Because the amount of time you put in, the amount of effort, and the amount of gambling that you do on these shows is monumentous. Yeah. It's huge. But it makes it all worth it.
Yeah, that's what it's funny, because it's funny what we do because we love it, right? Like if our families depended on stuff like this, they'd be like, yeah, you're gonna starve today, right? Like with what I'm doing, I mean, there's no way that I would ever be able to you know, finance or support a family doing this, not right now in the format that it's in. But I see that a lot, or hear that a lot. You know, people are just doing it because they love it. And I have a lot of respect for that. Yeah, you mentioned
I get by, you know, we're able to continue it and we're able to keep it going.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm working in an office and I'm a white collar worker or something. It's challenging.
Yeah.
But we literally get by in the support of our fans and people sharing stuff and inviting friends and our merch and coming to shows and just thanking us. You know, sometimes when you have a bummer run, you have two bummer days where you get completely rained out, or like something terrible happens and there's like no one there. But it's those things of like, thank you so much for doing what you do. This made my whole month. you know, this like put a smile on my face, or like this brought me right back.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, that to feel that stuff is what gets you through all those ups and downs,
You said you're from originally from Scranton. What are some of the venues that you've performed around this area, and which ones are some of your favorites?
B-Spot. That's fair. Those are my boys. I love Vinny, and him and my father go way back. And from, and this is no offense whatsoever, but from a small, from a bar venue, not a ticketed venue, the V-Spot is a place to play in Scranton. I'm just saying that right now. So, yeah.
Listen, I don't know who said it. Maybe I made it up, but I joke with Vinny. Vinny and I are very close as well. And I mean, that's not a joke. It's like it's kind of serious. Like if you play the V spot in Scranton, you've made it. You know, well, the guy books out a year in advance. It's like
I know
if you don't get in there, you know, it's, and when you do, it's like, okay, wow. And Vinny's very particular. He doesn't let just any Joe Blow get on that stage. Like he listens to the music. He's not just saying, yeah, you know, you can play. You've got 100,000, you know, listeners on Spotify. I don't care what you sound like. He puts time and effort into everyone he has there.
Yeah, and he's a musician too. You know, Vinny's a guitar player, was a guitar player. I know he's a metalhead, and we talk about that because I'm not real. You know, I've done my old band, the Holtzman Effect. I was in that band. That was my original band with those guys.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
I was a founding member of that band. So we wrote a ton of that material. You know, so like I could get down with that stuff too. And we kind of joke about the jam band thing. But Vinny genuinely cares about the artists. Mm-hmm. He wants to promote you. He wants to see you do good. He has your best interest and you feel it. You know, so I think that's why the V-Spot is successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, that little stage in the corner, that lighting he has there and a great little system, he made the most use of that venue. Mm-hmm. So for him, he like really, it shows that he puts the artist first. And that's why if I was ever going to play in any place in Scranton, that's where I would play.
Yeah.
River Street Jazz Cafe, that's like a hometown spot for us. After we did there, we've sold that out before, that venue. We've sold 300 plus tickets and turned people away on one of our shows before there. We've had amazing times there. We'll continue to go back there. You know, Sherman Theater, we've played the Sherman Theater. That's another amazing venue. Mm-hmm. I am excited about the new Ritz too.
Yeah.
The Ritz, I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I was excited about the Leonard. Nothing ever happened there, but I'll say this. Scranton desperately needs a 300 to 500 person venue where a touring act to come through and play and sell tickets right in town, or a local act to get on a big stage and open it up for guys and play, you know, showing support. We desperately need more venues like that in Scranton. And why everyone leaves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I've seen so many come and go over the years. You know, we mentioned the V-Spot, and I think it's, you know, well, I know it's successful because of what you just said, right? Same with the Jazz Cafe. It's successful and it's been around for 30 years because it's a great room and it takes care of the artists and it's a safe place for people to come to a show. But I mean, outside of those two, I mean, there aren't a lot of venues, and you know, you said the Ritz is a good addition, right? But it's sad. There's not a lot of venues. And I think the problem with that too is, you know, as a venue alone, right? Like you're not going to survive if you don't have a bar to serve alcohol in. Like you would have to be
most
just like,
profits.
Yeah, you would just have to be like this person who, like, they just loved, you know, entertainment and giving bands a place to play. So even if they just broke even, you know, they could still afford the rent or whatever, and they can have a venue. But so much goes into having a profitable venue these days, and it's tough.
It is. Yeah, I mean, and that's why, not to sound cheesy or anything, but like, if there's a band you like, there's a venue that you like, support them, because that's how you vote. Your votes with supporting them and getting their merch, or, you know, sharing your stuff online or inviting friends or any of that stuff makes the world of a difference. It really does for the venues, performers, community, because it's getting more and more challenging. I mean, I talk to people all over the country in different markets and kind of seeing what's going on. And a lot of these big, small venues are getting squeezed out. Mm-hmm. Unless you're Live Nation and some massive corporate run thing, that's a different vibe too. So I think local venues, 300 to 500 people capacity, there's nothing like playing a show in a room like that.
Yeah.
I mean, so it really is dependent on all of us to keep those things alive, because it is getting more and more challenging for them.
Do you think it's, I mean, I'm old. I have a family. Do you think it's this, I'm not going to shit on the younger generation. So that's not what I'm trying to do here. But I feel like they just do different things. And maybe live music is not on their list of things they want to do. Have you seen, like, as far as your audience goes, have you seen that to be true? Are you getting a younger audience?
So with our audience, that's an interesting question, because a lot of the fans, you have to realize, that grew up in this community, in this culture, we were kind of the tail end. You know, I'm 35, my partner's 38. We're talking about, you know, it's really, they see some people in our age range, and she sees more of it because she's at the shows doing the merch and helping in that. But it's some people our age range. A lot of people are older, but they're fading out because they're not leaving the house, not able to go out late and party. Those days are kind of ending for them.
Right.
So I get really excited about the next generation stuff. The younger kids and the younger community. We've had 12, 13-year-old kids at our shows before. And nice. That, to me, is the coolest thing. I always try to shake their hands, say thank you, like take a picture with them, give them extra energy, because that's the stuff that's going to keep this culture alive. Mm-hmm. Do I think nationally, is the youth changing? Yeah, I think the youth doesn't see live music anymore. I think they stream it on their phone. I think they go to venues that are massive. If they're going to see Drake or Usher, you know, a big band like that, Jelly Roll, they'll do that and pay $200 a ticket. But like how we grew up, going to the Staircase or going wherever to see this stuff, the $20 tickets, you know, for the night out, that stuff is, that middle ground is getting a lot more challenging, and it's dying out. So what's the answer? I think community. It has to be cool, and it has to be fun. It has to be more than just the music, because you could listen to all that music on your phone.
Yeah.
You could stream it the next day, you could watch the videos, but you can't give someone a hug, or you can't dance with someone, you can't meet a new awesome artist, or you can't build friendships the same way you can in person.
Right.
So I think a lot of those things have changed. You know, COVID didn't help that. COVID made people regress even more.
Yep.
And I think more people than ever have social anxieties. Like, they almost don't know how to interact anymore. They don't know how to do that thing. So I think it depends on us. It's our opportunity to bring it back. I do believe there's no better time in history to create, because the tools are right in front of us.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't even be able, if it wasn't for social networking and through the community, I wouldn't get to play with half of these super talented musicians. I wouldn't know them. You know, I couldn't see their stuff online. I couldn't scope them out or see how their vibe is. So I don't know. But I do think it's the power's in our hands, per se, and it's bigger than the music. You know, I'm a musician, so to me, that's the most important. But also, it's the community.
Yeah. I was talking to Charles Xavier. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not. But we were talking about the, you know, people coming out to shows and how, I don't want to say it's the responsibility of the band, but I guess to a degree it is. But just to make these, every show, like something like to go to, like, you know, making it worthwhile for, you know, someone my age to get a babysitter and like go out and support local musicians and just support local artists and the venues and all that kind of stuff, because it's hard to get out a lot, and you want to make sure that when you do go out, it's like it's worth it. So it's kind of, it's like in your hands to like, and it sounds like you are, all these things you're talking about, you have people who are vending and you have people who are painting, like it sounds like every show you're doing is like an experience.
Yeah, it pretty much is. You know, some are bigger, some are smaller, but overall, the sense is of when you go to a Jerry Duty show, you be your best self. Take your shoes off and dance. You do whatever you want. There's no rules as long as you're respecting everyone. That's the only rule. So let yourself be free and respect everyone. So if people want to be involved, I have them reach out. Or I have this awesome cannabis product, or I have this awesome new painting, or I'd love to go perform live. Sure. Everyone come. because it really is, it's a community thing.
Yeah.
The one thing I do, and this is a question for all listeners, you know, and really more artists, I think so. In the age that we live, it's became, you know, the marketing responsibilities and the promotion has all kind of fell away from the venues. They've saved those budgets and put more work on the artists. So more and more time is getting squeezed out from the creative part to the business part to be successful. So then it waters down the product. Then, like, instead of me thinking of new approaches or new tones or new, really creative set list, I'm thinking about like how to market this show, who else is going to be involved, how to, what press contacts we need to talk to. All those things that used to be venues, now they said, we're not going to do that anymore. Here's artists, do that all.
Yeah.
So I guess the point being said is we cannot do it without a community. We can't build a community without a community being on our side. Because the bandwidth of one, two, or five people to take on all those tasks and still remain an artist is very challenging. And some people do it really well. Me, I struggle with that. I'm going to say that I struggle with that balance.
Well, it's hard, man. Like, and it's weird too. Like, self-promotion. You know, even when I promote this show, like, it just feels odd to me. It feels like I'm bothering people. It feels like I'm, you know, annoying people and things like that. But it's just like, well, I mean, and I don't do it for me. I'm not making money doing this. Like, I want to share, you know, the conversations I'm having with these artists and musicians and creators. And I just want to share their message because what they're doing is super cool. But how do I do that unless I, you know, promote it?
Yeah, unless we're posting every day and keeping the algorithms, feeding the machine of the algorithms and all this other stuff. And every 30 years ago, it wasn't like that. So I'm still learning, you know? I'm still learning.
It's hard, and it changes every day. It changes quickly every day. It's like, how do you keep up? I'm not jealous of you guys. I mean, and it seems like every band has somebody who, like, you know, does the, you know, graphic design work or the you know, the promoting or the booking and all that kind of stuff. It's like you're forced to, like you said, to be a self-sufficient engine.
Yeah. I think that's for small business too. A lot of small business, it's like that now. You're invisible unless you could do all these things. So, yeah, it's, you know, I commend everyone else that's out there doing that because it's not easy. And you know, the way to go and the right on, that was great. And all that stuff keeps you going.
Yeah. Tell me about some venues outside this area that you really enjoyed or that were some of your favorites.
Okay. So we just played City Winery in St. Louis. That was my first show in St. Louis, Missouri. And that was really great. I had some of the best steak I think I've ever had in my life. An amazing treatment. They had incredible sound system. It's Meyer sound systems, which are like, if a band PA was $3,000, a Meyer one would be 50. I mean, so it's really incredible venue. I loved that. Nectar's in Vermont, that's where Fish started. They used to play there every week. And that's where that band essentially came from. So playing Nectar's was really cool. Some of the Vermont venues, like Zen Barn too, is a great time. To kind of circle back to some previous things is that the community, and is it kind of dying out? Is it changing? There's certain pockets in this country where there's young and younger people who are being brought up in this, and it's thriving. But it's little pockets, you know, Vermont being one of them, Buffalo, New York, Rochester, New York, you know, happening. Some areas in Boston. So back to venue, Sherman Theater, the Mochonk Opera House is a local one I absolutely loved. Yazger's Farm, the original Woodstock, that was really a cool time. We've played there a couple times. Off the top of my head, I think 118 North in Philadelphia, that's a cool, really cool spot for touring through. Yeah, those would probably be the top ones right now that really, Stone Church in New Hampshire, also a really cool happening scene with a pocket of people that are in this community. Great treatment, great sound. So yeah, I've been blessed to play quite a few and looking forward to some new ones.
Yeah. Do you get a chance to kind of walk around these towns that you're in before or after you play, or?
So sometimes, The answer is sometimes. And when I do, it's great. A lot of times I'll contact other musicians. We'll try and get breakfast or try and link up over there if it's possible. Depends if we're on a tour. You know, touring is definitely not like how you would expect, like Motley Crue or something, where it's like crazy parties and like getting back, getting drunk and wasted. It's like everyone's, I have my itinerary. We have to be at every single thing at a certain time or else you're going to miss it.
Right.
Everything's like dedicated. A lot of times you're getting limited sleep because you have to get to a venue 5 hours away in your direction and do that. So the amount of time is less and less.
Yeah.
I would say I don't really, and I wish I could.
Yeah, it's that's things because you have this opportunity that you're, I mean, you're already traveling. It'd be amazing to be able to, you know, really visit all of these different cities that you're in.
Yeah, some of it. So when I am fortunate enough, there's enough time, I do try and hit like the best local coffee shop. If they roast coffee there and stuff, I'll be there. We'll try and get like, I'm a foodie. I don't really party very much and stuff. So I'll try and get like the, me and my partner, whoever else is with us, try and get the best lunch possible or dinner. We like that. Something local and fresh and like organic and nice. That's what we like to do.
Sure.
Try and scope out the foods and coffee and just check out the scene, the art scene.
That's great. I'm not saying you have to go party. Yeah. Just like as long as you're, you know, you're consuming the different offerings that they have. So that's cool. I mean, cool. I don't get to travel that often these days. I got two kids and all that. And, but no, before them, when my wife and I were, you know, we didn't have children, it was fun to travel and see different cities and just like kind of get lost, like, you know, without really an idea where we're going. Just go down here, you know,
like different dimensions. Yeah. That's how we've been laughing about that, because when you travel a lot, you feel like you have this crazy jet lag, but it's like, was that just a dream?
Yeah.
It almost feels like a dream. We just did a cross-country trip and stuff, and it felt like a complete dream. So many different... We live in America, but there's so many different pockets of cultures of people that live and act and view things differently than we do in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So it's really refreshing and gives you humility to know that it's not just done this way. There's right. A lot of ways to do it. So that's what I learned from traveling. I just did Costa Rica this past year.
Cool.
I got flown over to Costa Rica to perform. That's another thing. Talking about different. Everyone, there's no military. Their healthcare costs are very minimal. Everything's organic in the whole country. Everyone's like, no one's in the rush. No, it's not cool to rush.
Yeah.
You know, people walk places. So totally different. Imagine taking a New Yorker and putting them there. It's like, wow, shell shock.
Yeah, right. That's what's cool about the world in general too. There's like so much of this that, you know, we might never see. Like I know there's stuff that I'll never see. As long as I live, I'll never see it. You see people sharing stuff. And a buddy of mine is going, I think he's going to go golfing next year, or maybe it's this year in Nova Scotia. And he shared images of the golf course. And I'm like, it's so hard to believe that there is something in the world that looks like that. Like it's incredible.
It's so vast. It gives you such gratitude. Know that exactly what you're saying. We can do something every single week until we pass and still not encounter more than 5% of what's on this planet.
Yeah.
And that's probably being very generous saying that.
I was talking to somebody recently. Well, it was probably months ago, but you know, just if you're driving and you look up at the mountains and you just see the trees, like there's like, I don't know how much of it, like there's probably parts of the world that has never been seen by anyone.
Oh, no doubt. It's
crazy to think.
No doubt. Hasn't been like, touched by human hands. It's been right. There forever.
No one's seen it. I think there's like the same with the ocean and how much of that has been unexplored.
That's so like crazy. Space.
Yeah.
That's so like crazy. The ocean's like space. It's like so much out that it will never...
That's,
I don't know.
That's crazy to think about. Like, I don't know. I don't know. We don't, yeah, there's not enough time on this earth for us.
It's wild. That is true.
Unfortunately. And when I had kids, I, you know, before children, I was like, yeah, you know, whatever. But like when I had kids, I was like, I want to live forever.
True.
Because I don't ever want to be without them.
Just be a vampire. That's a sign up to become vampires.
If that's on the board,
we'll live forever. I mean, come on.
I'm fine with that.
It'd be easier to feed, just drink blood, live forever, you know? It's, I don't know. You'd be ridiculously smart. You would have seen everything.
Well, when you figure that out, let me know.
I'll private message you, Johnny.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, we're still in the first quarter of 2024. What do you have lined up for this year? Anything special you could talk about or
Yeah. So last year was super active. We were all over and touring quite a bit. This year, not as much because I've been taking on some other things in my family and other projects I want to do. For myself, I want to start writing original music again and want to give that some focus and time. But for Jerry Duty and these projects, I'm performing with myself, and also I lead other bands too across the country. So I'll get hired and brought in to be the front man and do the Jerry thing for a lot of other bands. So stay tuned for that in different markets all over. We have our tour coming up in March. We're playing in Syracuse on the 11th, I believe it is. Then we're doing Rochester the 14th, Ithaca the 15th, River Street Jazz Cafe the 16th. So that's our March, our first leg of our March tour. We'll be back for another local show April 20th at the Renegade Winery, which should be super exciting. And then we're still working on routing and touring for throughout the year. I would say the best things for people is check out Johnny Litt's Jerry Duty on Facebook. Give us a follow if you do the social media thing. If you don't, it's johnnylitt.com. I try to stay pretty regular on posting dates that come in and tours that come in. I know we have some Jersey dates. We have some Connecticut dates in the works. We have a Maine date in the works. But yeah. So a lot of things coming all the time, but johnnylitt.com is the best way to stay connected to that. That or the Facebook, or we have Instagram or any of that stuff too. But I know not everyone's done social media. So
yeah,
you find it there.
YouTube, I'm assuming.
Yeah, YouTube. We're not as heavy on YouTube. We have a lot of tape or stuff on archive and whatnot. But yeah, the best place is probably Facebook, or I try to stay somewhat regular on Instagram. I would stay tuned for other projects too. I'm looking forward to doing some other collective shows coming up. One of them might be a Bob Dylan thing. Okay. He holds a big space in my heart, along with writing some more original music and collaborating with all sorts of other musicians and genres even that'll expand me and challenge me. It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I was going to ask you if, like, you know, after you told you were in a founding member of the Holtzman Effect, you know, as you're performing someone else's music, if you kind of missed that whole, like, original aspect of things.
I do sometimes. I miss the creative process. I miss the collaboration of having an idea and bouncing off other people and, like, adding insight and developing ideas and putting out there. I love that part. I have ideas all the time that I'm just limited by time. So I do miss that. When it comes to what I do currently, I have such creative freedom.
Right.
And really, I'm so selective that I don't play something unless I love it. You know, I had mentors and stuff years ago that said, Johnny, you could never do that. You could never just play that type of music ever. You won't make it. You'll never make it. And I said, man, this is what I love. I love this stuff. It's not like for any other reason, because I purely love the culture and I love this thing. So I have such creative freedom that I don't really get bored of this stuff. I don't. But I do have an itch to continue to create, maybe play some heavy music again. You know, I miss the brutal distorted guitars and the, you know, the different approach. Yeah. Jam band music, believe it or not, is extremely challenging. So from the aspect of these songs, it's not, you're not playing these songs of like a Blink-182 song or these chords through. I mean, we're talking about multiple minutes long of creative passages made up on the spot and improvised trying to tell a story. So you don't really practice for that stuff. You have to breathe it. So it's very challenging.
Sure.
So it keeps me on my toes, keeps me getting better and learning how to adapt. I'd love to maybe do some outlaw country stuff again. I played Telecaster and did that for a while. I like Waylon Jennings and stuff. That's cool. I think that there's a part in the market that people aren't really doing that so much. And I'm really interested about writing some original music again, not for any other reason of what's popular, what would sell, or what, just purely because it's me telling stories. Right. Whether that's brutal metal music or whether that's jammy, bouncy music or, you know, reggae or whatever I feel.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, I love that about musicians who can, you know, they can do one genre and they can do something else and just, you know, they're well versed in everything. And it's always cool to hear when people want to do different things like that. So best of luck with all that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Johnny. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Check out Johnny Litt's Jerry Duty on Facebook, online at johnnylitt.com. Jazz Cafe, March 16th, Saturday. I'm assuming tickets are still available. Hopefully they're not sold out
yet. I haven't heard they sold out. That's okay. The official Dark Star Orchestra after party. So we booked that show, and then Dark Star Orchestra announced their 2-day run at the Kirby. So we're really trying to extend the weekend for everyone.
Right.
You know, the thing is, they're going to go there, and then the party's going to go over to the Jazz Cafe after, and we're going to end that run there. We may even have, I'm not going to say who yet, but we may even have a special guest stop over, as well as the ones that are with us, you know, Brooke from Twiddle and some of those guys. So I'm super excited. Yes, tickets are still available, I believe.
So hopefully when this airs and people are watching, listening, if you're listening and are watching, go find the ticket somewhere. Jazz Cafe's website shows a link to everything on your site and Facebook page. Yep. But hurry up, because tickets might be on the way sold out. So
we have sold out that venue before. Yes.
Yeah. It can happen. And now it's a special night too. Outside of all the great musicians, it's an after party too. So
it's awesome. Going to be a good time. No doubt about it.
Oh yeah,
man. Things will get weird for sure.
I love that. When I was younger, I'd get drunk and I'd say, let's get weird. Cause I love it.
That's kind of the motto for some of our fans, you know, being what I said, it's about expression and no judgment. So under those contexts, things do get weird.
Yeah, I love it.
But always cool. Always
I love that cool. So much. Well, Johnny, thank you so much for taking the time. I really enjoyed talking to you. And like I said, I've seen the name all over the place. I've heard about you. So it's great to get a chance to talk to you.
Likewise, Johnny. Appreciate all that you do, man. Really, it means a lot. And it really helps this community that I'm blessed to be part of.
I'm also happy to be part of it. So thank you.
Thanks, brother.
All right, buddy. We'll see you soon.
Yep.
Later.